welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 33rd episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. Before I get to the show today, I thought I'd give you all an update on the podcaster throwdown for Halos of Hope. Yesterday, according to Nathania Apple from Pearlescence Yarns, Team Knitmore Girls still has a sizable lead on all the other teams, but Team Sockaholic had a big jump this week. So let me give you the count so far. Team Knitmore Girls is at 119 hats. Team Naughty Girls is at 50 hats. Team Craftlit is at 7 hats. Team Sockaholic is at 91 hats. That's up from 55 hats last week. Big jump this week. And Team Ready, Set, Knit is at 12 hats. This is just a reminder that we did also start a new thread on the Podcaster Throwdown Ravelry group so we can talk about the prizes that we are being offered. We have not listed them all yet, but I know that I'm going to be working with Tammy Burke, our moderator, to make sure that the XRX prizes and some of the other prizes are listed up there yet this week. For all of you other fiber arts podcasters, please consider joining the Rumble. We'd love to have you create your own teams or join one of the other teams and join us for this great charity campaign to benefit Halos of Hope. And please keep listening to Fiber Hooligan. We'll try to have updates about this great charity effort at the top of every show. Okay. My guest today is an award-winning designer, teacher, and author of Betsy Bede's Confessions of a Left-Named Brain Knitter, published by XRX Books. After more than 50 years of knitting, she is thrilled to have discovered a creative process that allows the left and right side of her brain to play together nicely. She has yet to encounter a knitting project that cannot be enhanced by the judicious application of beads. She is a staple and a favorite at Stitches, and her Craftsy.com class, Brilliant Knit Beads, has allowed her to share her innovative techniques with thousands of students. She has also recently launched her own e-commerce site, the Studio B Knits Shop, where her original patterns, material kits, limited edition, and occasional piece of her highly regarded one-of-a-kind jewelry is available for sale. And since this show is airing today on Cyber Monday, I encourage all of you folks to save a few of your online dollars because I think you might find yourself infected with bead mania by the time this show is over, and we're gonna make sure that you have a way to deal with that. I'm so pleased to have this remarkable lady on the show. I'm speaking of my dear friend, Betsy Hirschberg. Betsy joins us this morning from Philadelphia, PA. Good morning, Betsy, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Benjamin. Good morning to you, too.
How are you this fine morning? I guess it's afternoon there now, isn't it?
Just barely. We've just passed the noon hour, and I think I'm finally starting to emerge from my food coma from Thanksgiving. We do it up right here in Philadelphia, family Thanksgiving, where we all bring things we've been doing for years, and we all wait and don't eat for 3 days beforehand, and then we go crazy, and then we're in a coma for 3 days, and I'm just coming out of it now, just in time.
Well, you're from Philly, and we'll get to Thanksgiving in just a minute, but there is a question I think that's on my mind and has been on the mind of many people, and we're going to come into this so that this is a natural segue to what I know is important to the Fiber Hooligan audience. You know, Philly is the home of the cheesesteak, obviously, as you know.
Too true.
And you would agree that a proper cheesesteak is done with Cheese Whiz. Would you not agree with that?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define proper. Yes, the standard best-known Philadelphia cheesesteak is done with Cheese Whiz, but you also have to know the lingo. So when you go up to order your cheesesteak, you have to say you want a cheesesteak wit or wit out. So a cheesesteak wit means you get Cheese Whiz, and wit out means no cheese.
All right. So... And this is important because, you know, I take a bit of grief, as you know, from people about my Cheese Whiz habit. You know, I just want to go on record for all of the naysayers out there, Jeannie, that, you know, Cheese Whiz is a respectable food. for, you know, if it's good enough for the official, you know, Philadelphia cheesesteak, then I'm
well,
just
we just have to get, we have to get both you and Jeannie here to Philadelphia, and I will give you a personal tour of the best places to get cheesesteaks in Philadelphia, and maybe we can turn Jeannie to the Cheese Whiz side.
I think that's asking quite a bit.
I don't know. Pretty good. It's pretty good when you put it on a cheesesteak with sautéed onions and a really good Amoroso's roll. Pretty amazing.
I don't know. I think, you know, you might be able to infect somebody like Jeannie with bead mania, but I think Cheese Whiz is one of those things that she looks at every single time she sees me post something online about Cheese Whiz, and she goes, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. But
that's,
you know,
because she hasn't tried it. Let her try it, and then we'll talk again.
That's right. Okay. Well, that's a perfectly valid point. So the Thanksgiving weekend, you had the whole family in?
We do. We do Thanksgiving at my sister's house, and we have a wonderful tradition that everyone seems to laugh about when I tell them, and that is we've all gotten so good at the various dishes that we bring that no one is allowed to bring something different without auditioning the new thing. So if you come with something new, you must also bring the something old that everyone loves, and then we get to decide whether you get to replace the old thing with the new thing. But no one can be spontaneous and bring something new because we've all come to depend upon the dishes that we all make and bring. And it's our favorite holiday of the whole year. No one misses Thanksgiving unless they have a really, really good reason.
Well, Thanksgiving is one of my favorites. I was a little hung up this last time. You know, Barbara Liggins, I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit. I had hand surgery on Wednesday, just before the show, before Thanksgiving, and with the idea that I'd take this long weekend to kind of recover, and I'll go back to the doctor today and have the dressing and the splint taken off and all that stuff. And it was fine. It was exactly what I thought it should be, which is a lot less typing than I usually do on the computer because my hands didn't work so well. The only downside is I felt silly several times, especially during Thanksgiving, which we had over with David, Elaine, and Lexi, because my dear wife Krista had to cut up my turkey for me. I felt a little silly.
Oh, I would have paid good money to see that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm slightly useless. Well, I mean, for all of you who know me, I'm more than slightly useless, but I was slightly useless on there. Hey, before we get into today, one last thing. We're going to just pick at you. You have some news? You have some big news about your daughter?
Oh, thank you, Benjamin. I do. We're very excited here. My daughter is going to be in her first Broadway show. My daughter is an actress, for those of you who don't know. She's a singer and an actress in New York City. And she found out as she was taking the train home from New York to Philadelphia on Wednesday that she's been cast in her first Broadway show. So we're pretty excited about that.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, please, you know, extend our Piper Hooligan good wishes to her.
I will. Thank you, Benjamin.
All right, let's get into this. So now that we've chatted a little bit, let's give our listeners a little background about you. And what I want to talk about to start is not so much the fiber arts part, but, you know, kind of where did you grow up and where did you go to school and where did you study, that kind of thing. You want to tell us your story a little bit?
Sure. I have a pretty traditional background. I grew up in a suburb of Philadelphia, a western suburb called Havertown, in your classic 50s suburban neighborhood where we all just went outside and played all day, rode bicycles, we knew our neighbors. I was fortunate enough to live next door to my aunt and uncle who lived next door to my grandparents, so we had this wonderful extended family who all seemed like one big family. And I had a pretty idyllic childhood. I ended up going to Cornell University for college, and I majored in theater there. I always wanted to be an actress. I was a singer and an actress myself, although nowhere near as talented as my daughter is now. But that's what I wanted to do, so I spent 4 years in Ithaca, which is not a bad place to spend 4 years, and had a great time at college. I loved it. It was great. But after that, I think I always wanted to be an actress but never understood what it would mean to be a working actress. So when I finally moved to New York after college and met so many people who had the same goal and discovered that it was a really, really hard business, it still is, and that I would not have the kind of life that I imagined for myself, living in one place, raising a family, doing the things that my own family did and being brought up the way I was brought up. And so I decided that maybe it wasn't for me. So after living in New York for a while, I moved back to Philadelphia and then began a series of adventures that have defined actually my entire adult life. So it was pretty normal getting to that point. Pretty normal. And after that, it got a little crazy.
Well, maybe crazy is the way, but you've done some interesting things, you know, before your foray into the fiber arts world. And, you know, some of them are just too much fun. We've got to tell fiber hooligans what you used to do. Of course, you know, the thing that I was most aware of is that I think that the voiceover work that I understood, you know, before we talked in our pre-interview, are you still the voice of the Philadelphia International Airport?
Not anymore. And that part of my career is actually relatively current compared to some of the other things. I think that my work history would have most employment recruiters scratching their heads and throwing my resume into the weirdo pile. I like to say that I have reincarnated every 10 years. So shall I give you my work history just really quickly,
please,
in chronological order?
It's great. Yes, please.
Okay. So... when I went to New York after college, I studied and performed with a mime company. And people who know how much I like to talk find that to be a very humorous choice for me. But I did indeed work for a mime company. I lived in the Caribbean for a while and taught scuba diving, which was a great job, going to work in a bikini every day. Somewhere down the line after that, I ended up working as a medical receptionist because I was still working as an actress in the Philadelphia area, and as any actors know, you always have to have a good day job, and my dad was a doctor, so I got a job in a doctor's office while I worked in the theater at night, and then went on to get an MBA in healthcare consulting and worked as a healthcare consultant for many years. And when I finally got around to getting married in my early 30s, I then became a stay-at-home mom, which has been my favorite job ever. I like to say it's the hardest work I've ever done, but the most rewarding. And once my kids were starting to be out of the house a little bit, I fell into jobs doing voiceover work. So I had done quite a bit of... doing kind of like ads and technical readings for voiceover stuff. And then I was introduced to a man who had a audiobook company. And he hired me to do audiobooks because as part of my theatrical training in college, I loved to do dialects. My father was a great storyteller, and he used all kinds of dialects, and I think I inherited his ear. My husband likes to call me a vocal chameleon. If I hear a dialect, I can repeat it. And this particular audiobook publisher liked to use readers who could do what they call in the business fully voiced readings, which means that you have to choose a character voice for every character in the book so that when you listen to the book, you can distinguish between the characters before the author says, you know, said Dick, said Jane, you know who's speaking. So that was enormous fun for me because it allowed me to do what I first got involved with theater to do in the first place, which was I wanted to play all the characters. So that was great fun. And I have about 10 books in circulation as an audiobook reader. And he sent me off into books that had a lot of fun voices. One of my favorites was doing a Margaret Truman murder mystery in which I had to be... do the voice of a Scottish detective and a Swedish food importer and a Boston cop with a head cold all in the same scene. That was kind of fun. So I really enjoyed doing that, and I did that for about 10 years. Again, another 10-year reincarnation. And then life changed drastically in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I found myself moving back into the fiber world. I like to describe myself as being broad, not deep. And by that I mean I have interest in lots of things, so it's been very hard for me to stay involved with any one thing forever. So I kind of say that I've had serial passions. I go from one thing and get very passionately involved in it, and then when the next thing attracts me, then I'll move over and get very involved and learn about that and do that for a while. It's been very rewarding. Actually, I like to say that the word bored does not exist in my vocabulary. I don't understand how people are ever bored. There's so many things to do. There's so many things to learn. There's so many things to play with. So I feel very fortunate that I've had an opportunity to play with a lot of things throughout my life.
Well, I absolutely agree. And I'm somebody that suffers a little bit from the same problem. I have a history of reinventing myself every 5 years. The gig that I'm in right now at XRX is a little over 7 years now, which is the longest gig I've ever had. But of course, as
wow.
you know, I had to start another company because, you know, for me, I don't get it either, because if I couldn't do either one of the things I'm doing now, I can think of 10 things just right off the top of my head that I'd love to try.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. People write to me all the time and say, well, why aren't you weaving? Why aren't you making your own closures and doing metalsmithing? And I'm saying, I want to do all of those things. I want to learn how to spin. I want to learn how to weave. I want to learn how to make metal jewelry. But there aren't enough hours in the day, besides which my husband would probably kill me if I brought fire into the house. Start doing, lamp work beads or any of those things.
I have met your husband, and, just my limited perspective, my limited exposure to him, I think he'd support you on that, if for no other reason than you just wouldn't program the VCR.
Oh, now you're giving away family secrets, Benjamin. I'm not sure that's kosher. Wait a minute.
Okay.
You didn't warn me about that.
No, but you are. And this is something we're going to get into in a minute. I was using that as a segue into you are the person in your house that's really very linear, that takes care of all of those kinds of things.
I do. I always joke that if my husband ever thought about us splitting up, my way of keeping him here or keeping him involved would be that I would unplug and deprogram all of the devices in my house, the televisions, the phones, the computers. I mean, he'd be absolutely at a loss. I think that alone would make him stay with me. But I like understanding my world. I like reading manuals. Instructional manuals, I love them. I read them cover to cover. Maybe that's a sign of a control freak. I don't know. But I like understanding how to work my world.
I've never thought of you in those terms, Betsy. Not at all.
Yeah, sure.
I don't actually think of you. I think of you in terms of being a precise person.
Yes, that's fair.
Yeah. And extremely disciplined about the things. But, yeah, I've done it. I've read an owner's manual for an electronic device, but I've never enjoyed it. But we won't talk about that too much more.
Well, I think that's a gender thing.
Is it?
I think so. Pretty sure.
Okay. Well, you know, since my audience is primarily women, we'll have them jump into the chat room and see whether that's a gender thing or not. I'd love to hear what they have to say about that. Okay. So before your foray into the fiber arts world, you did do fiber arts growing up. Your mom.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my mom. Sorry?
She teach you.
My mom taught me a couple of really important things. Beyond just teaching me how to knit, she also insisted that I learn how to correct my own mistakes, which was huge and something I don't think enough people as they're learning to knit, because it gives you the freedom to keep knitting. You aren't dependent on either a family member, relative, friend who has more skill than you do, or your local yarn shop to help you out when you get stuck. So that was a really big thing. But the other thing she did for me was, when I would ask her questions about making changes to a particular pattern, if there was something I wanted to alter, maybe it was the color, maybe it was the length, who knows, any number of things, I would always ask her first, and I would say, what do you think? You know, is this a good idea? Should I try this? And she would always look at me, and she insists now it wasn't exactly in these words, but this is the way I remember it. She would say to me, I don't know, try it, see what happens. And at the time, I just found that really annoying, you know. So just tell me what do you think? Tell me what I should do. But many years later, I came to realize how empowering those words were and how by forcing me to try things and see what happened, she was empowering me to make creative choices and to learn how to make creative choices. And that has been a gift beyond measure that I'm absolutely convinced that I did not understand fully until I got into what I'm doing now and realized how helpful that has been to me. So yeah, so I knit all the time. I knit growing up. I knit through high school. I knit in college. I knit until I had my first child, and then life got very busy, and I put down my knitting and just didn't have time for it until both of my kids were, I think my oldest was maybe 4 or 5, and my youngest was 3, and a friend of mine who was a quilter was talking about getting a quilt ready to take down to the Jersey Shore with her, saying that she never went anywhere without something to work on. And I said, yeah, I used to be that way about knitting, but now I don't have time anymore. And she said, what are you talking about? Your children are old enough now. What? Just go back to it. So at that point, I took out of the drawer a vest that I had started for my husband, and I finished it in 3 days, and I haven't put down my knitting since. So yeah, I've always been a knitter, but I've always thought of myself as a technical knitter, which kind of lines up with the way I think about things in general, just understanding how things get made and being curious to learn all the techniques I could possibly learn. I always chose the projects I wanted to knit primarily because they had a technique that I didn't know how to do, and I wanted the thing that the project would make enough that it would force me to learn the technique. So that's the way I knit for my entire knitting life up until probably my mid to late 40s. And I was very content. It wasn't that I was unhappy or felt that I was missing anything. That was just the way I knit, and that's where I got my pleasure. So I never felt less than for just being what I assumed was a technical knitter.
Well, at some point you had, you had a big trip and you had some revelations, and it has to do with your mom.
Yep.
You guys went on a big trip, a fiber arts trip, you could say.
We did.
So can you tell us about, first of all, why, when, and
yep.
Tell us about that trip you went on.
Okay. It started about 2 years earlier. My sister was celebrating a 50th birthday. We're very close. And I told her that if she picked out yarn that I would make a sweater for her for her 50th birthday. And in the process of doing that, I was forced to make some decisions about what to make that were maybe a little more creative than ones that I had done in the past. And I was so pleased with what I had done, I started to think to myself that maybe I could be creative in the knitting world. And, how would that work? What would I do? But I really didn't have any hard and fast ideas about it. It just was something that entered my mind. And then for my 50th birthday in the year 2000, I noticed that Vogue was offering what I believe was their first Vogue knitting tour. It was to Great Britain, Scotland, and Ireland. The Ireland was an extension, but the first part of it was just in England and Wales and Scotland. And my husband gave that to me for my 50th birthday present, which was just amazing. And I kept talking about it to my mother, and she kept saying things like, oh, you're so lucky. What a great trip. That's going to be so much fun. And I finally said to her, I said, why don't you come with me? I mean, how much fun would that be? You're the person who taught me to knit. Let's go together. And she said, you wouldn't mind? You wouldn't feel like I was in the way? I said, are you crazy? No, that would just make it that much better. So the two of us headed off for what turned out to be 16 days. We started out in London, and there were about 65 women, I think, on buses, traveling all around England. We had workshops with some of the world's great knitwear designers. We were in Debbie Bliss's store. We had workshops with Sasha Kagan and went over to Wales and were with Colinette. We met with Keith Fawcett and Brandon Mobley and just had an amazing trip. Oh, we spent 3 days on a bus in Scotland with Alice Starmore. Be still my heart. Oh, it was amazing. And we went to mills. We saw where the yarns were made and how they were made and got to learn a little bit about the history of knitting in Great Britain. And what I found myself doing was kind of pigeonholing these designers and asking them what it was like to be a knitwear designer. What were their lives like? What did they like about it? What were the challenges of it? And what I learned was that, for the most part, first of all, most of them, other than Alice Starmore, most of them had been trained in some kind of art discipline. They'd gone to art school, and then subsequently they had chosen knitting as their medium of expression. So they were artists first and knitters second, whereas Alice Starmore was always a knitter from childhood on. So most of these people who were designers were more interested in the design than in the knitting. And they said, if you really want to make a living as a knitting designer, you're going to spend most of your time designing patterns. You're going to be working up swatches, you're going to be writing patterns, and then sending out the knitting to test knitters, which was a concept that was completely foreign to me. I had no idea that people did that. I assumed that all these designers were sitting in their studio somewhere, and they were just really fast knitters. They were knitting up all these garments that I was seeing in magazines and whatnot. So I got a great education, and I realized that at the time I said, well, if being a knitwear designer means I have to give up the knitting, well, not happening. I was not ready to give up the knitting, because that, for me, is where the pleasure lies. I actually love the process. I'm a process knitter. I think the world is divided between process knitters and product knitters, people who knit because they like the process and people who knit because they like the stuff. I like the stuff. I mean, the fact that I knit and I get stuff afterwards is pretty cool, but I'd rather do the knitting. I describe myself to my students as a Penelope knitter, you know, Ulysses' wife who sat and knit forever while he was out doing his voyages and created the scarf that ran out the door and down the road or whatever, just because she liked to knit and she was waiting. And I would be happy doing that. That would not be a problem for me. I just like sitting in a chair with needles and yarn, and it's very meditative for me. So that's what I like. So I realized that at that point I thought, well, I can't be a designer. It was not a hard thing for me to give up at that point in time. So that's what I did.
You came back from this trip, and you had mm-hmm. met all these wonderful people. And I think I remember it was Maggie Jackson, and I think you met Colinette as well. And,
oh, yes.
You know,
oh, Maggie was amazing. And Colinette, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Just to go in her yarn room. I mean, knitters out there, you would die to go in her yarn room. It's just spectacular. It's so inspiring.
You had a good time. It was obviously a great trip for both you and your mom. And you came back, and you were kind of revved up after that.
Yeah,
point.
I was a little revved up.
You're a little revved up.
Now I had gone, to backtrack a little bit, I had gone to Stitches events because Stitches was held, Stitches East, at that point in time in the late 90s, I guess it was held out in Valley Forge, which is very close to where I live outside in Philadelphia. So I had gone there primarily to go to market, to look at yarns and buy yarns and whatnot. I bought my first Koigu there when it first came out, and the Landers were there, you know, pushing this brand new yarn that I went absolutely insane over. But I had never taken a class there. And then in 2002, I think it was the last year you were in Valley Forge at East, was in 2002, and I signed up to take a couple of classes, but the big one was a six-hour class with Lily Chin that purported to teach basic bead knitting techniques. And I thought it would be fun to have something else to add to my knitting. Oh, little did I know. I actually arrived an hour late to the class because there was an accident on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. So being someone who, this will not surprise you, is also pathologically on time, I was nigh unto hysterical when I ran into the room an hour late to a six-hour class. And thankfully, Lily was very understanding. And did I tell you this? I actually, in one of my classes recently, was telling the story, and someone came up to me and she said, "You won't remember me, but I'm actually the person that found you a chair when you walked in the door to that class." So she remembered my being there. And I don't know how to explain what happened to me. I just like to say that I walked out of that class with a little swatch, a sum total of 6 hours. I walked out with a swatch. It's about 2 inches high and about 4 inches wide. And my knitter's brain exploded. I mean, all I wanted to do was play with beads and fiber. I was like a woman possessed. And I came home. I pulled out all the technique books that I had. I still do have quite an extensive knitting library of both pattern books and reference books. And I pulled out all these reference books, and I started ordering odd lots of beads from eBay, which was a place I had never been before. And these boxes started arriving at my house, and I would empty the boxes on my floor and then spend 6 hours organizing the beads that came out before I could start to knit with them. All of a sudden, I had to have little boxes to put them in. Got a little waylaid. What can I tell you? But then I just started to play. I just took every technique I knew as a knitter, and given the techniques that Lily had taught me, I tried to add beads to them to see what I could come up with. And I had no plans. I promise you, I had no plans to do anything with it other than enjoy it, you know, to figure out how I could add them to projects and whatnot. And I did that for about 18 months, and I still had kids at home, so my life was still kind of full, and I was still doing voiceover work. And so I just played for about 18 months doing these things, and I created little swatches that I saved and put up on the wall with thumbtacks. So I fondly named them my UBOs, my unidentified beaded objects, and decided that they were like my little etudes. They were my little studies. I played piano for 12 years as growing up as a child, and there were always these little pieces that you played to learn how to play and how to work certain techniques. And so I felt like these little UBOs were my knitting equivalent of that. They were little studies and things that I could learn things from. So even if they didn't work quite as I expected them to, I saved them because I figured, you know, I'd learned something from them in the moment, and maybe as I advanced my technique, I would go back to them or learn something more from them in the future. So, yeah, but I had no idea what I was going to do with them. I just did them because it was fun and it interested me.
Well, you eventually got yourself to a point where you did a little design work. It was not for Knitters Magazine, but we'll talk a bit about that. It was for a contest. We didn't talk about this the other day, but it's kind of a good story. You did kind of a cool piece.
It's a fun story. I hadn't made anything formal with my knitting stuff. I'd made one thing. I had taken a Koigu vest, like a tunic, and I had decided that was my first project with beads, and it was a Koigu tunic that they call the puzzle tunic. It has 156 mitered squares in it, and I used a sum total of 47 beads in the entire project. So it's just an example of, I like to start small, baby steps. I don't get overly involved, so that was a good first step for me. But then I saw in Vogue magazine they had a contest where they asked people to design a scarf that would help promote breast cancer awareness. And sadly, my husband's sister died of breast cancer in 1999 when she was just 60 years old. And her niece is kind of like a second daughter to me. And I felt very motivated to create something that would both allow me to use my new bead knitting skills, and that would also be something that would be contemporary and something that she might be proud to wear in honor of her mother. So I designed a scarf out of pure cashmere and these beautiful pink beads with little breast cancer awareness symbol all over it and pink beaded fringe. And I was really quite pleased with it. And it was the first thing I kind of put out into the world to show people what I was doing. And you had to have the entries in by April. This was in 2005. And I sent mine in, and they said you'd hear something by June. I didn't hear anything, but I thought, well, that's fine. I'm sure they had hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of entries. And it was just a good exercise for me to design something that I was proud of and send it off. And I went away that summer. We have a cabin up in the woods in Maine, and I was up in Maine with my husband, and my son called me from home to say that there was a message on our answering machine from a woman who identified herself as being an editor at Vogue Knitting, and she wanted a written statement from me to put alongside the photo of my prize-winning scarf. So I said, are you sure she had the right number? And I immediately called her back, and it turned out that there was a bit of a confusion because the contest was co-sponsored by Vogue and by Crafter's Choice, and Crafter's Choice thought Vogue was notifying the winners, and Vogue thought Crafter's Choice was notifying the winners. So none of us had been notified. And there were three categories. There was knitting, crocheting, and mixed media. Mine fell into the mixed media category because of the beads, and I won the grand prize in mixed media. So it was very exciting. They had pictures of the winning scarves in their holiday issue in the fall of 2005. So that was a very exciting moment for me and a bit of validation to suggest maybe I ought to think about doing a little more of this.
Well, and I've seen a picture of it. I'm sorry that we don't have visuals for this, but I thought parenthetically we should just mentioned that this design has gotten a second life to do some good.
Yes, it's going to. I'm so excited about this. I don't think anybody knows this but you and Pam at this point.
I think so. Right.
For a couple of years, what I did was I had the pattern available on my website, and I allowed people to download it for free, just asking that if they did that, that they would consider making a donation either via their time or some financial support to the breast cancer support awareness or treatment or whatever, you know, organization of their choice, just as a kind of quid pro quo for having the pattern. And when I knew that Pam Hashke and Halos of Hope were soliciting designs for hats from designers, I don't do hats, but I thought to myself, the pattern had not been on the website for a while, and I thought maybe this would be a way for me to do a little something to support the incredible work that she's doing. So I am giving her this pattern to sell from Halos of Hope, and with the proceeds going to support the amazing work they're doing.
Yes, and on behalf of Halos of Hope, we want to thank you for that. I don't believe we have the pattern up on the halosofhope.org website yet, but it's something that we'll be working on.
Yeah, I think Pam was waiting for her new site to get totally functional before she added it to. So once you guys feel that that's ready, the pattern will be off to you and available for people to purchase and support.
It actually is. We just Thanksgiving hit us, and yeah, the site is fully functional. They moved it over to Hopscotch as well, and so they're up there doing patterns, so it should be.
Oh, terrific! Okay, well then the pattern will be off to her later this week.
Yep. So, at some point, you moved to the other side of the desk, and you became a teacher at Stitches. You were no longer in the classroom; you were teaching classes. And so, what were those early days of teaching classes at Stitches like?
Well, I had taken a job in a local knitting store in the same time I was playing around with beads. My youngest was getting ready to graduate from high school, and I needed to do something else with my life. So I took a part-time job, and the woman who ran that store was one of the most creative people I've ever met in my life, and she was so supportive of me, and she encouraged me to do some design work with the yarns that weren't selling in the store, and she also allowed me to start teaching some introductory knitting classes, and I discovered that I had some skills that I didn't know I had, and it was a great place to start out and try that on a small scale, and I had a number of just remarkable women students who were so supportive of me and encouraging, and we kind of learned how to teach and learn together, so that was great. And once I stopped just playing with beads and knitting and settled on making bead-knitted jewelry, I just had put together a couple of pieces and was starting to talk to people about it. I encourage people, if you're interested in getting your work out there and you want to kind of reach a broader audience, you just talk about what you do. And I ended up meeting some gallery people here in Philadelphia. I ended up having a gallery in New York interested in my work. So I did a little exhibiting of my work, but I wanted to get out even further. So I decided one day to be very brave, and I was a subscriber to Knitters Magazine. And I felt like Knitters was one of the few publications that makes themselves really accessible to their audience. I mean, you always know how to get in touch with you guys. You give us, you know, mailing addresses. You give us emails that we can contact you with. So I thought, well, here goes nothing. And I sat down and I wrote an email to Rick Mondragon, who I had, you know, seen at Stitches events. I had started taking classes and gone to some of the events and thought, well, he's the editor. You know, maybe he'll have some ideas for me. So one day I sat down, I wrote this overlong email, which I showed to my husband, and he said, you can't send that to anybody. He said, no one's going to read a 2.5-page single-spaced email about your entire life history before getting to a couple of pictures. You need to do some work on this. So university professor that he is, he edited for me down to about a paragraph and a half, and I attached some pictures, and I sent it to Rick. I, you know, closed my eyes, pressed send, and said, now let's just forget about this. You know, who knows if he even opens unsolicited emails. You know, maybe he doesn't. Who knows if he'll ever hear back. And I went off and did some other things and came back to my computer, and 45 minutes later, there was an email from Rick. I was gobsmacked. He wrote and he said, I've never seen anything like this before. You know, when you say you want to get out to a larger audience, what is it that you want to do? You know, do you want to write articles for the magazine? Do you want to design? Do you want to teach? And so, having gotten much better at my editing skills, my return email to him, I believe, said yes, yes, and yes. So, about 20 minutes later, I got a call from the person who was in charge of Stitches events at the time, who said, Rick just called me and he wants you to come teach at Stitches West. I was calling in the fall of 2006, I think it was, and they wanted me to come teach at West in February. And my kind of natural cautiousness kicked in, and I said, whoa, Nellie. I said, how about if we just talk first? So I came down to East, showed Elaine and Rick my work, and they were very supportive, and together we came up with a strategy for me to try to come up with some designs to put in the magazine so people would get to know maybe what I did and who I was first, because I just decided who would want to take a class with me if they had no idea who I was or what I did amongst all of these kind of knitting superstars, right? And so they were great. They worked with me, and they published some of my designs in the magazine, actually 3 months in a row. And I taught for my first time at Stitches East, which my people here on the East Coast, in the fall of 2007. And it was amazing. I was so in awe. I was so in awe of these people when I walked into the first teachers' meeting. And then I think Lily threw a sweater across the room at me or something to get me to lighten up a little bit, and it was all good from there.
Well, and I have to be honest, I came back into the scene about the same time that you started working with us, and I think I missed you at the first Stitches that you mm-hmm. were at. I mean, I'm sure we talked, but you know me, I suffer from, you know, lack of attention all the time. But what it really got me was the stuff you put into Knitters Magazine, because I actually happened to be on the photo shoot when they were putting your stuff on the model. And Karen Bright, who works in our offices now as our managing editor, she absolutely fell in love with that and got infected right away. I think she did
infected
for herself.
Infected.
Right away.
What a great choice of words. She got infected. Okay.
Infected. And she started doing this. I mean, we were all very puzzled because none of us had seen anything like this. And folks, if you want to go back and take a look at some older Knitters magazines, these were really interesting pieces. Well, they still are interesting pieces, and you know, some of them have shown up again in the book, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, using various sized wooden balls and different techniques to do this stuff, very, very pretty stuff. I mean, Karen likes it. And I really think she was more of a product knitter at this point, which is she just wanted mm-hmm. this beautiful thing by the time she was done.
Right.
And when we put this out, we weren't too sure how the regular knitting crowd would react to it, but they reacted very positively to it.
Yeah, it was. It's been really surprising, quite frankly, and very gratifying that I understand that. Especially because much of my work is done at a very small scale with fine yarns and little teeny tiny needles and little teeny tiny glass beads, that it can be intimidating. But I try to convey to people that if they can just take a breath and recognize that it's still the knitting they know, it's still two sticks and a string or a circular needle and a string, you're still using all the same techniques. You're knitting, you're purling, you're casting on, you're binding off, you're increasing, you're decreasing. You've just added some beads into the mix. And it's what you do. So you're making little pieces of knitted fabric, like we do for anything we make, whether it's a sweater or a scarf or a hat, we're making pieces of knitted fabric. It's what you do with those pieces of bead knitted fabric wherein the magic lies. I like to call it knitting made clever. Okay, so it's fun. You take these little pieces of knitting, and that's what the whole swatching process has done for me. It's allowed me to create little pieces of knitting that I can then manipulate or figure out how to exploit what the yarn wants to do anyway with beads on it, and then take what the fiber in the yarn is giving me to create things. I feel like, for me, ideas come from the work as I'm knitting, as opposed to getting some abstract idea and then just trying to realize it on my needles. I let the ideas come from the work, and that's what's so exciting for me, because I always have a source of new ideas because I'm pretty much always working.
So eventually, okay, now you're working with these crazy people, you know, from South Dakota that reply in 45 minutes and say, hey, we want you to do this without, you know. I mean, again, you've worked with us enough to know that we just go. I mean, we just kind of trust our instincts.
Oh, it's one of your greatest strengths, though, Benjamin. It really is. I mean, you guys just, you operate on gut instinct. You know, you see something you like, and you're willing to be supportive of it, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, people like me don't get a chance. You know, that's why someone like me gets a chance to do this, is because you don't worry about who the person is. You look at the work and say, this is interesting. People can learn something and will enjoy making these things. And then you just go with it. That's a real gift.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's, you know us. It's a family thing, and we don't do things like other people. You know, much to the chagrin of some of the people that work with us. And I want to talk about that, because I want to talk next about your book, Betsy Beats: Confessions of a Left Brain Knitter. Because, folks, if you've never worked on a book before, you don't really write a book; you give birth to a book. And it is a painful process. And the publisher you work with is an interesting choice. And the way that XRX Books does books is not like any other company. And it's start and stop, and it's long periods of just contemplating, and then it's a flurry of activity, and things move very fast. And to navigate that, I mean, there's a small support group of people that have worked with us that get together and say, okay,
previous authors,
previous authors, they get together and warn and help people cope. So let's talk about.
And you always get terrified when you see us talking together, you know.
So
about
well, I used to, but now I realize no, that's just going to happen. I've got Myra Wood. We're talking about this, sitting in the chat room, like quietly whistling, like she doesn't know we're talking about this.
Myra and I, I'm sure it won't surprise you to know, Myra and I have been in fairly close contact as this process has moved forward for her, and it's what Gwen Bortner did for me. Gwen was my, you know, pre-publication helpful guru, and I'm trying to provide that same support to Myra because she so deserves it, and I'm so excited about her book.
Yeah, book's going to be great. But back to your book. So the process, working with XRX, a little strange. I know. You want to talk about any of that? And you don't have
yeah.
to.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is how it happened. I'll try to keep this as short as I can. Elaine Rowley, who's the R in XRX and the editor of XRX Books, approached me, and she had taken one of my classes. I was so nervous when she sat in on one of my classes. And she approached me saying that you guys liked my work and that if I had ever thought about doing a book in the future, that she hoped that we would, that I would give you guys a proposal. And I had never thought about doing a book. And she was wonderfully, brutally honest with me. She said, just know that if you decide to do this, you're going to be giving up at least 2 years of your life. Oh, okay. Good to know. And I spent another year thinking about it because I didn't want to do a pattern book. I just didn't want to give up 2 years of my life to do designs. And unless I had something to say, in my mind, if I had something to say that would add to this kind of creative landscape, then that might be worth giving up 2 years of my life. And spending another year in the classroom, I came to understand how many people were in the same place that I was, you know, 5 or 10 years before, thinking of themselves as technical knitters, not thinking of themselves as being creative knitters at all. And looking back and realizing that I had come from being that person to someone who now felt like I had enormous creative energy and was able to make things that did not look like other people's work, I thought, well, if I can go back and retrace my steps and figure out how I got from that old technical me to the new, more creative me and somehow explicate that process to people, that might be worth spending 2 years of my life on, to help other people get from where they were to where they wanted to be. So I spent a lot of time looking over what had happened to me and trying to analyze it. And when I thought I had it figured out, I wrote up a proposal and sent it to you guys. And amazingly, you said, yes, we would like to share this information with our readers, and we think it's valuable, and let's work together and try to make it happen. So the night I signed my contract was the same day that Jane Slicer Smith's book was being released at a Stitches event, and I saw that book, and I thought, oh, my gosh. I thought it was the most beautiful craft book I'd ever seen in my entire life, and I went over to Alexis because I knew he was going to be doing the photography, and I just complimented him on the book. I just told him how extraordinary it was, and he put his hands on my shoulders, and he said, Betsy, don't you understand? Your book is going to be just as beautiful as Jane's. I said, Alexis, you went to Australia and you shot 9,000 photographs that you were able to use to illustrate and enhance Jane's incredible work. I said, you're not coming to Mount Airy, Pennsylvania, shooting 9,000 photos that are going to make my work look good. And he said, no. I have an idea of how I want to shoot your book, and I'm really excited about it, and it's going to be different than the things that I normally do, and don't you worry, I have a plan. And I said, okay. And I trusted him, and he did not disappoint. I now call him the Illuminator. What he did with the photography in my book was just extraordinary. So I had the great benefit of working with a really one-of-a-kind genius photographer. And then I got the wonderful advantage of working with Elaine. And now you have to understand, I had been approached by some other publishers who only wanted me to do pattern books, which I didn't want to do, but I also had no interest in working with a publisher who was just a book publisher. By working with Elaine, I got to work with an extraordinarily skilled editor who was also an accomplished knitter. So when I would send things in to her with these techniques that were perhaps unusual or a little around the bend, she was able to try them out. She would put yarn on needles and add beads and try things and say, yes, I understand what you're trying to do, but I think maybe there's a better way to explain it, and here's what I'm thinking. So it was this incredible collaborative process, but it was also, as you said, you send people away. You know, once I signed my contract, it was like, okay, you know, eager puppy, what do I do now? And basically, Rick and Elaine said, go away. What do you mean, go away? Go away and design. So I got home, and I had a complete panic attack. I said, oh, my God, I've convinced these people I know how to write a book, and they've told me to go away and do it. I have no idea what I'm doing. I was terrified, Benjamin. So I called my daughter, who's involved in a creative field, and she said, Mom, take a breath and calm down. She says, here's what you're going to do. She said, first of all, you're having the same feelings that every creative person has at some point in their life. You feel like an imposter, right? And I said, absolutely. I've duped these poor people. They have no idea. They've given me a contract to write a book that I don't know how to write. She said, don't worry about it. She said, the problem is that you're looking too far ahead and that you're thinking of this in a big picture. She said, you don't have to get up out of your chair and run a marathon. She said, go from where you are now and just start by wiggling your creative fingers and toes. I thought, how did this child get so smart? She just basically told me to slow down and follow my process, which is to take baby steps. That I didn't have to get overwhelmed by the entire project, but if I focused on what I knew how to do and just did it a little bit at a time, that things would start to come to me. And that first 6 months that Elaine and Rick sent me away, that's what I did. And for them to give me that time and space to play within my process, that is a gift beyond measure. I mean, you don't realize it at the time, but in order to be creative, you do need time. You need time and you need emotional headspace to practice things and to see what happens and not feel pressured to get everything done at the same time. So that was just an enormous gift. And then, as you said, once we got closer to the point where things really needed to start getting on paper, I had had the time. I showed them work in progress. They signed off on it. I went away again. And then when it came time, push comes to shove. I remember you saying to me, because I was getting nervous that I wasn't getting the quote-unquote attention that I felt I needed, and you said, just wait. When Elaine turns and shines her light on you, then it's going to be, you know, straight on, and it's going to be nonstop. And it was for a period of months. I mean, it went from not hearing from Elaine to hearing from her 3, 4, 5 times a day. And my husband likes to tell people that he remembers after the fifth day he came in here a row and found me in my pajamas that I hadn't changed my clothes in 5 days because I was in here working and responding to things. He said he knew that we were really into it. But it was the most exciting time. It was really so exciting, and it was just a process that worked really, really well for me, and I could not be happier with the outcome.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful book, and I had the great privilege, not something that I've been able to do with every author, of being there and seeing the book probably minutes before Betsy did. We were at TNNA in Phoenix, and that's kind of a special moment when you see the book for the first time, and you know it's really funny. It was extremely it was kind of emotional, I think, for both of us, because you know it's a 2-year process. And, you know, you're bringing the book, and I think it took about 15 minutes for us to find a mistake in it, which is always a fun thing to do. But
you warned me. You had warned me, which was I was so grateful for, because you said, just know that we're going to have a million eyes on this, and we're all going to do our best work at trying to find any errata, but we're going to miss stuff. We are going to miss stuff, so just know that's going to happen. Prepare yourself and know that we'll put corrections out there, and it's fine. It's all good. It happens to everybody. Yeah, so no,
it happens
really
to everybody.
Yeah.
But it was a nice moment. Who else was there with us? It was just you and me. Was Rick there with us?
Rick was there. Yep. And
I'm not sure Lane, because they probably hadn't come in yet. Molly was there. That's right.
Yeah, I think Molly was there. Yeah, it was. We were in the lobby of the hotel, and I was just and I couldn't really look at it. I just kind of like. Just kept turning the pages, you know, just to see every single page, and just I really was overwhelmed. It wasn't until later that night when I went back into my room by myself that I just spent. Then I read it. I went back up to the room and read it after just looking at it, and it was just an extraordinary moment. When you see that much time you've spent on something and see it realized in hard copy and beautiful photographs and the layout. Oh my God, Natalie Sorensen did just an incredible job with the artistic layout. Everybody, there were so many people that had to do so much hard work to bring that, you know, to be real. And it was overwhelming to think of how many people collaborated on that. Oh, and Rick and Elaine, you know, with ideas to modify things and great ideas to expand on my ideas. They were just so helpful. It was amazing.
Well, it was, and it was great, and we could all see that it was great. But you know, the next morning, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. The books were on the floor at TNNA in the Unicorn booth. Your pieces were, you know, displayed actually in a very pretty kind of gallery-esque setting in the XRX booth, and we were mobbed.
It was overwhelming. People were so kind, but they were so curious. People, because when you look at my work oftentimes from a distance, you don't recognize that it's knitting. And when real knitters look at it and go and they pick it up, then they really, to have that kind of audience, I mean, I've done one-of-a-kind work for years that I've done at high-end craft shows. And people appreciate that it's fiber, but they don't understand what it takes to make it. When you show that work to people who actually knit and get a sense of what it takes to create work like that, and you get their feedback, that's extraordinary. That's like family. You know, that's like family saying, you've done good. You know, so it was amazing. And I said, after a while, I mean, looking around, you guys had pictures of me and the work all over that huge place. I said, after about 3 days, I was sick of me. You know, every time I turned around, you guys marketed the hell out of that book.
I did warn you about that too, remember? I did actually say, you know, by the time you're done with this, you're going to have, you know, but you're going to be really tired of you know, your face and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it was true. I mean, we had stuff everywhere, and we had good partners out there that, you know, all helped push the book because they had their fibers merchandised, and it was great. Now, of course, the next step, and TNNA is a wholesale show, and so you don't get the kind of volume you get of number of people that you would get at a retail. So you went from, you know, what I would consider, you know, relatively small show for attendance, the Super Bowl of fiber shows, Stitches West, a couple months later, and that was a little overwhelming.
I get exhausted just thinking about it.
That was a little overwhelming because by then we had more signs printed, and you were doing the opening day, and you were doing presentation. I mean, we darn near killed.
It was a lot.
I know we darn near killed you.
Well, but you know what? It was like, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. You know, I was so excited. There's no way. You know, if I had left the floor, I would have been too excited and anxious to sit still anywhere. So it was just as well that I was running around like a crazy person, you know, talking to everybody. And everybody was so kind. I mean, everybody was so supportive. I mean, I know you and I talked, and one of our concerns about the book was that usually with books like this, when there are lots of projects that use lots of yarn, that you get overwhelming support from the vendors at a show like this. But my pieces, you know, maybe the most amount of yarn that any one piece uses is 150 yards, and most of them are more like, you know, 10, 20, 30 yards. So we weren't clear on what kind of support we were going to get from vendors on the floor. And then it was quite the opposite. And I need to give a shout out to Jeannie Randolph at Fiesta, because she saw this coming before anybody. And before the book even came out, you know, we collaborated on colors and beads of one of my favorite fibers of hers that I used in the book, and she had kits on the floor at West when the book came out, and that was just an enormous boon to the book. So a big thank you to Jeannie for that.
Well, it was huge, and you know, your family came out to see you speak. That was fun, and
yep.
Just everything about that weekend was so high energy.
Except for the moment when Alexis took my mother and my daughter for a tour of San Francisco and ran out of gas on the highway on the way back. Things kind of came to a stop there.
But other than that,
it was very high energy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be an XRX thing if we didn't have some travel accident. That's just part of the course for us. But it was pretty great, and you know, it was a lot of fun for me. I mean, these things, people, I know you get it. When you put a book out there, it's very personal, and for XRX as well. You know, these are not just products we put out. You know, it's very personal. You know, so of course, you know, we all want everybody to love our children and think they're beautiful, right? And
yeah.
You know, it was just a nice time. It was a very nice time. But I want to talk a little bit about the book is very good. You're a very good presenter, and the message is great. Caused some problems out there. You're a dealer. Let's just say it. You're a dealer. You get people started with this stuff, and I know some of the people. I mean, Marley has confessed that she's got bead mania. If you've gotten Fiona into it, I've seen Jeannie go crazy. Elaine has lost her mind. The one that we've really lost, though, in the office is Lisa Manis, our marketing person, who is out of control. I mean, out of control.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
you want to take any
wonderful.
Responsibility for this?
I take total responsibility. I tell people when they walk into my class that it's a possibility, that I want to warn them. I said, you know, if you have that kind of addictive personality and you want to leave, now's the time. Get out now while you still can, because, you know, after the next 3 hours, you may be going down the rabbit hole with the rest of us. The truth is, I have so much fun doing this, Benjamin. I really do just want everyone to have as much fun as I do. I mean, there are endless possibilities with this stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, you're combining two totally different materials. You know, yarn is soft and stretchy and, you know, gazillion different colors, and then beads come in a myriad of different shapes, and they're hard and they're shiny, and it just, I can't stop the ideas from coming. I like to describe my brain as being like an airport runway. I feel like all these ideas are lined up, you know, ready to take off. And so I don't see myself ever running out of ideas. And, I mean, even Elaine, as you said, Elaine, when we were working on the book, said to me, you know, Betsy, you know how much I love what we're doing here, but I'm not sure it's for me. You know, I'm not sure that I'll ever really get into doing it, but I just want you to know how much I like it. And then the next time I saw her, I think it was at Stitches South, she comes running across that atrium there with bags of beads and fiber. She's going, oh, look what I found. Did you find the vendor that has the resin? Look at this, look at that. And I said, Elaine, I thought this wasn't for you. And she goes, well, I'm kind of having fun. But she said, don't focus on me. She said, if you want to see someone, she said, look at Lisa. Look at Lisa Manis. Lisa done lost her mind. Okay. And then Lisa comes running over with bags of beads and fiber, and she's now trying to find out ways to hide them from her husband in the garage, and I'm being held personally responsible for all of this. Oh, my God.
Well, and I gotta explain how this works. Lisa is really, I mean, she is a very pretty gal and a very
beautiful
smart gal. And and she's the one that runs around the show and takes pictures and does a lot of other things for us. But if you go to a show, that's probably how you would know Lisa. She's that, you know, cute, sassy blonde that runs around taking pictures. She fell in love with the bead thing. And I can't tell you how many times, because her office is right down the hall from mine, that I walk into her office around noon where she's taking her lunch, and her door is shut, and she's eating a granola bar, and her door is shut because she doesn't want to be involved because she's counting beads. And she just continues to make these things over and over. And, I mean, she's made several of the same kind just because she wants different color variations because of what she – I mean, she is – I don't know, but something's happened.
And you don't find this a normal thing? You have a problem with this?
I just think that somebody out there should start a 12-step program, since obviously you're working the other angle. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, you know, sorry. We're having fun. If you don't like it, you can leave the party.
We're having fun here. Hi to you.
I have no desire to move away. No, sorry.
Okay. Well, a minute ago you talked about engaging your brain, and this is the other part of the book, and in my opinion, the more important part of the book, a philosophy. As you said, you didn't want to do a pattern book, and if you know us, we don't either. That's just not what we do. We're all about taking patterns and having them make a point. You had a philosophy that we wanted to capture, and you sold it to us right away. I mean, it was, and it's fantastic. And it's this whole idea of left brain versus right brain. And for those of you who have not heard you talk about this, I'd love for you to talk about this for a little bit.
Okay. I'll try not to go crazy with this. So when I said that I, over that year in between your Elaine approaching me about a book and then trying to figure out how I got from point A to point B, what I recognized, and I had started to do a little reading about the scientific basis of left versus right brain function, and discovered that people who are left-brained are much more highly organized, they like working linearly, they are not abstract thinkers, whereas you know, their time is very important to us. We make lists of things, whereas right brain people are more often thought to be the creative people. They're the ones who are artists. And I recognized that growing up, I knew that I wasn't one of those quote-unquote artistic people. I had real trouble with A words, art and artistic, and I felt really that they were loaded. I didn't know who gets to decide who is and who isn't, and I felt less than because I didn't think of myself. So I couldn't be, I imposed it on myself because I was not a right-brained artistic person, therefore I did not have the ability to create things. And what I discovered in working on the bead knitting is that I am no less creative than a right-brained person. I just require a different process in order to tap into my creativity. My sister likes to describe me as concrete, linear, sequential. And that is absolutely the way in which I work. I take baby steps. I make one little choice, and then I make another little choice, and then that choice answers one question, but brings up another one, and then I use the next watch to answer that question, and so on, until I get to the point where I've come up with something that I feel is what I was looking for to begin with, or I discover in making a swatch that the yarn and the beads want to become something other than I originally thought, but maybe that's more interesting than what I started out with. So that's what I say, that the ideas come from the work for me. So I think what I've tried to connote in this book is that people who were like me and don't think of themselves as being creative, but who want to be, can employ this particular process that involves taking time, trying to analyze what it is that you like and don't like, and then using those likes to jumpstart a process that allows you to tap into your creativity. So we go into that in the book, but I really feel like it's empowered me in a way that I couldn't have anticipated, and judging by the feedback that I'm getting from students and from people who have not just bought the book and looked at the pretty pictures, and that's fine too, but people who've actually read, there are 7 essays in the book talking about this process, that have actually read it and incorporated it into their own work, have been so kind and generous in getting in touch with me and letting me know how it has allowed them to to be creative in ways that they didn't even believe that they had. So it's not a negative. It's not an either or that left brainers only do this and right brainers only do that. Everybody's a hybrid, to a certain degree. But we just all need to come up with our own process that allows us to tap into the creativity that I really believe is inherent in all of us.
Well, and I have been there because, you know, you've given this talk, not an open day presentation, but the talk about, you know, tapping into just the doing, start.
Yes, and, exactly.
And,
well, here's
and a lot
what
of people come on. Yeah.
Here's what happens, Benjamin. The getting started is the hard part, right? All of us, we're all so focused outwards on what other people will think about our work, right, as opposed to what it is we want to do, that we stand at the beginning of this creative road. And before we even get started, all we do is we look down the road and we see the potholes and the hurdles, right? We see all the things that are going to stop us from getting where we think we want to go. So rather than encounter that, when we know that these roadblocks are going to break our creative hearts, we don't even get started. Okay, so what I'm saying is stop focusing down the road, stop focusing on what other people want you to do or what they might like, because the truth is you can't control what anybody else likes. And so as soon as you start designing or creating for what other people want, then you've lost your own voice. Then you cannot create what it is that's important to you and what you like to do. That's really hard for us, especially with women. We're socialized to be givers, you know, to not be selfish, to not think about ourselves. And I'm telling you that in this particular arena, it's okay. You know, focus on what you like to do, and know that there are going to be people out there that like it and people that don't, and that's okay, because the only person you really need to please is yourself, right? So if you just, as you say, just doing it, just getting started, my focus on A words was so negative for me that I discovered, when I discovered another A word, that was the key for me. I discovered that within the word creative is the word active, okay? If you are active, that's the A word that works for me, not art, not artistry, whatever, but active. If I remain active, actively working on what it is that I love, that I'm going to end up being creative, because if you start with nothing and you end up with something, just in point of fact, you are being creative. You have created something from nothing. And that's so joyful. And anybody can do that, whether you're doing it to sell, whether you're doing it to give, whether you're doing it for yourself. It doesn't matter. It's you making something where before there was nothing.
Well, right on.
I'm sorry, I get a little passionate about this.
No,
preach, sister, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You go, girl. So you know, I've sat and I, you know, you've done your talk about this at the show before as kind of like a little free presentation, and I've had people come up to me afterwards and said, I just feel so inspired. You know, and of course I always try to correct them and say, really, from Betsy? No, that's not true. No, it does inspire people, and you're funny and you're approachable, and I think your essays in the book come across about that. But I want to talk about another way that you've approached the world, because not everybody can get to Stitches, and I want to talk about your craftsy.com class. You and I both know, so much fun. Yes, and you have a great class over there. Can you talk about your craftsy class?
This was so much fun for me. One of the first pattern that I had in knitters was to create these beads. When I decided to make jewelry, I looked at what the components of jewelry were, whether it was a chain or a link or a bead, whatever it was, and most of those things I could recreate with knitting techniques that I knew. But to create a three-dimensional form like a bead was very challenging, because I thought, well, knitting is basically a two-dimensional art form. We're creating two-dimensional pieces of flat fabric. And then I thought about it for a while and realized that that was foolish, because we're actually using those two-dimensional pieces of fabric to cover a three-dimensional form, which is the human body. So if we could take those pieces of knitting and cover a human body, why couldn't I cover a little wooden bead, use that as a support for this bead? So I came up with this idea of making these little wrappers for wooden beads, and that was the first pattern that you guys published for me in Knitters. So it's been a very, very popular concept, and so that's what Craftsy decided they wanted to put out there. So in between my first pattern, I'd come up with several different ways to make these little wrappers, some of them horizontal, some of them vertical, some of them on straight needles, some of them on circular needles. So we did a whole class about that, and I love the Craftsy platform. It's been great. I've interacted with students. They write me questions. We get into conversations about materials and supplies, and what's most rewarding is seeing how people take these fairly simple techniques, to my mind, and then they incorporate them into their own work, and they embellish them, or they enhance them, or they do amazing things with them. And now, instead of my inspiring people to do my work, they're inspiring me to take my work to the next level because of the work that they do. The only thing I will say that was unsettling was in the actual teaching of the class. I'm so used to being in front of a classroom of people where my theatrical training really does come to the fore, because for me, teaching is kind of a theatrical experience. I love talking to people. I love responding to questions. I love creating a fun atmosphere where we can laugh and relax and really enjoy our time together. And when you're at Craftsy, you're in a room with two people behind a camera and a third person back, and no one's responding to anything. So you can probably tell from this interview, I do like to talk, and I could just go on forever, but after a while, not getting any feedback from people was something you really need to adjust to. So at the first day, I thought I had totally blown it. I just thought I had blown it, and my good friend Gwen Bortner, again, who had again done this before me, emailed me and said, oh, I bet you were great, and I'm going, no, I blew it. I was terrible. But it was actually okay, and then by the second and third day, once you get the rhythm of how it works, then you can start being yourself again. And so, and then we went back and re-recorded some of the early stuff, so it was a great experience, and it's ongoing, and we're just having great fun doing it.
Well, I've actually watched your entire class.
Glutton for punishment, well, are you?
Well, you know, can't I?
5 hours, Benjamin. It's a lot of time.
I'll be honest. I skimmed through part of it, but yeah, no,
I'm glad to know that.
Well, it was fairly early on when you got started with them, and at that point, I think only two or three of our Stitches teachers had done classes with them, and So I was very interested in how this works and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I have to be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of others since then, so you're one of the lucky ones. But the class is amazing, and the class is called Brilliant Knit Beads, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, I've been in touch with John and Josh over there, and so, folks, we're going to give away one of Betsy's classes right now on the air, and I'm going to give you the number to call in. It is area code 718-664-9655. And I'm going to take the second caller today. And while we're waiting for somebody to call in, you've had a couple of thousand people download this already. And
oh yeah, several. Yeah. I think we're over 3,000 now. So, you know, I mean, I know there are a lot of Craftsy classes that are up in stratospheric numbers beyond that. But this is kind of a niche class for people who are willing to work small, and they've been just wonderful, and it's been a pleasure interacting with everybody, and it's still selling, so this is awesome.
All right, I've got my second caller. Callers, if you're listening to me, please turn down the volume on your computer so we don't get the echo of death, and therefore I won't have to be forced to hang up on you. So the second caller in is area code 412. Area 412, you're on the air.
Hi, Benjamin. This is Liz from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Liz. How are you doing?
Good, Liz.
Thanks. Hi, Betsy. I love everything that you do, Betsy, and it was so inspiring to hear your story.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling in today, and you have won one of Betsy's online Craftsy.com classes, and you've listened to the show before, I hope, so you know the drill. Please send me all of your information to Benjamin@FiberHooligan.com, and I will get with the folks at Craftsy and issue the code for the class.
Oh, I'm so excited, Betsy. I love your stuff, and I've always been sort of intimidated by beads, so now I'm going to do the Craftsy class, and I know I'll do great.
Oh, Absolutely, and you know, we demo everything on with heavier weight yarn and big plastic beads, so that you can see what's going on. And just know that I'm there. And once you get a chance to actually get started on the class, if you have any questions, please, you know, ask away, because I check in all the time, and I'm there to help you. That's what's one of the nicest things about it. And let me know that it's you, okay?
I will.
Okay,
thank
great.
You so much, both of you. Take care. Bye bye.
You're welcome.
Take
you
care.
Too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun.
That was awesome, isn't it? And for those people who did not get in on that, craftsy.com has given me another class to give away, and I'm going to ask our moderator, Tammy Burke, to put that up on our Ravelry group. And
yay.
We'll let that run a week. We'll let that run a week, and then I'll pick one of you that comments in that thread randomly using a random number. So that was cool.
Yeah.
It was very cool. All right, let's talk about your newest venture. This is something that is great. And this started, well, my knowledge of this started at Stitches West last year when you showed me the Abacus bracelet. And so let's talk about the Abacus bracelet and what that has led to.
Okay. So I, as I said, I'm always liking to play with technique, and I have books filled with ideas. I have to write them down. I've gotten to a certain age where I cannot remember half the time what I had for breakfast. So when I come up with ideas, I write them down, and then I go back and look through them when I'm feeling hungry for something to do. And this was a particular idea I had probably 3 years ago about how I could show more beads in projects and yet not have people have to string lots of beads up front, because I found from my students that while a lot of people do enjoy applying beads pre-strung, not everyone likes to do all that counting and stuff up front and recognizing that if you make a mistake, then you've got 600 beads on your fiber and you have to undo it. It's not a lot of fun. So I wanted to come up with a technique that would allow people to use a lot of beads without having to pre-string them. So this particular technique, it shows a lot of beads. It has an enormous number of variations that are possible, and it's been really well received. And the technique creates a beaded form that looks kind of like a Chinese abacus, which is a tool that's used for mathematical purposes and for counting. And so that's why I named it the abacus technique. And I've now started designing bracelets and necklaces. When I wanted to figure out a way to get this to people and started teaching it, people wanted then to be able to make more of them, and I also recognize that it's challenging when you have to go out and buy one place for your yarn, another place for your beads, another place for your tools. And so I finally got convinced that maybe it was time for me to start packing up these into kits that people could easily buy online and providing the patterns, which also includes a full explanation with photos about how to work the actual technique, because, again, it's something different that people haven't done before. It uses a very fine steel crochet hook to apply multiple beads on a single stitch. And if you check out the website, which I think Benjamin has talked about, there are lots of visuals on there so you can see the kind of things that we create. And there are lots of variations, which I've gotten into, and I'm going to take some photographs of those and maybe post them on my Ravelry group so people can see what's possible, not just what you know you can do with these kind of beginning kits where you're learning the technique and how to manipulate these things and create these pieces. But the other thing I've done is I've made everything on the website a la carte, so that the kits themselves do not include the pattern, because they come in multiple colorways. So you only have to buy the pattern once, and then you can buy kits to make them in various colorways without having to pay for a pattern again. So it's been really fun to create these, and I've taught the class a couple of times now, and people are responding amazingly well and able to learn the technique really quickly. And I've had people able to finish an entire bracelet in a three-hour class. So it's great for gift-giving. Start now, and you'll have gifts for Christmas and Hanukkah's over. It was early this year. But they make great gifts for people. And check out the website. It's at store.studiobknits.com. And come see what we've got. And I think you'll really enjoy. And you can learn the technique just from the pattern. You don't have to take a class. That was the other motivation, because not everybody can get to these classes. And I wanted to make the technique available to people outside of a classroom environment.
Well, they're very pretty. Please, you know, head on up to store.studiobknits.com as well as studiobknits.com. You can, there's links to from both sites each
other. Can I mention one other thing quickly?
Please.
And that is the only reason I was able to actually get this website together was because when I brought this bracelet to Benjamin's attention at Stitches West last year, I was also whining about the fact that I was thinking about doing an e-commerce site, but that my current web designer who created my creative site with my one-of-a-kind stuff on it really was at a loss at how to create a store. And at that time, Benjamin was in the process of having beta users test out the new Hopscotch software. So he graciously allowed me to be a beta user. And so I was able to develop this website using the Hopscotch software, which has just been such a treat. And it's been a learning experience, but it allows me to have the control of my website, which is, I think, what, you know, creative people want to be able to make their sites look equally creative without having to depend on a web designer to do all the work for them. So I've been able to constantly update the site, and moving forward, I can make it look like I want it to look, and that's made the whole process so much less onerous, both in the creation of it and moving forward. I know that it's mine, and I get to play with it and make it look exactly how I want. So I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, thank you very much, and I should tell you, it's not the same. You know, it's for those of you who are in it now, or just starting into Hopscotch Web now, it's not the same experience that some of our earlier users like Jeannie or Myra or Betsy got into. There was absolutely no documentation and very little explanation about a lot, and there's a lot of pieces to it. I mean, it's a full-fledged e-commerce solution. There's coupon codes and reports and users, and I mean, there's stuff. I mean, it's not complicated once you know it, and once there's just a modicum of documentation that says what it does. But you know, it's
users do. You know, beta users assist in the development of that, and that's both. You know, it's a challenge, but it also gives you an opportunity to help create what it is you know that people will need to use moving forward. So it just enhances both the experience for everyone.
Well, we appreciate your faith in us.
Oh, it was. There's no question; it was worth it. I couldn't be more pleased with the result.
So this Abacus bracelet is a beautiful piece. And if you haven't jumped up there, you don't know what you're missing. And I understand you want to give away one of these kits on the air, Betsy.
I do. I'd like to give away a kit for the Sine Curve bracelet, which is, I think, the easiest piece to learn from, which is why I want to give that away to a potentially new user. And it comes in 6 different colors. So we'll give away that kit, and then when the person sends in their information, they can choose the color they want from the website, and we'll get that right out to them.
Great. So if Barbara Hooligan's listening, that's area code 718-664-9655. This is really a beautiful kit, and we have a caller on the line, so I'm going to choose caller from area code 208. Area code 208, please turn down the volume on your computer, and putting you online now. Area code 208,
you're on the air.
Hey, Tammy, how you doing?
I'm fine. Do you want to put me on hold and draw another winner?
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay.
Tammy's our moderator. We'll let one of the others come in. All right, folks, I'm sorry if I kicked you off there. So if I kicked you off accidentally when I picked up Tammy's call, please call back in. I apologize about that.
Right. I should articulate this is both, they'll get both, obviously, the materials kit and the pattern. The pattern comes as a downloadable PDF. So it's really easy to print it out and get working.
Okay, I've got another caller here. And for some reason, it's not coming in. Did I give that number out right, folks? It's area code 718-664-9655. Did you guys all get that? No, I'm having trouble. Okay, my switchboard is messing up.
Well, then worst comes to worst, we'll put two of them on the Ravelry group.
We're probably going to have to. Something appears to be amiss with Blog Talk Radio, folks. I'm sorry if you're trying to call in. We'll make this up, and we'll put something in the Ravelry group instead. I apologize about that. We're having just a bit of technical problems. I see three people trying to call in, and I can make none of them live, and I have no idea why that is going on. So I apologize about that, folks. Nothing I can do about it now, so we're moving on. Okay, let's pivot over to the story of the caution bracelet. If you go up to store.studiobnits.com and look at the abacus or the materials kit, there is a pretty little bracelet. It's yellow with black beads. It's a yellow beads with black beads in it that says caution. And it looks like a beaded caution tape. There's a story behind that, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like crime scene tape. My wonderful, beautiful daughter has at times can we say she can be occasionally high maintenance. We love her unconditionally. But a couple of years ago, she started a new relationship with a young man. And after a couple of months, she called me one night and she said, "Mom, I think he really loves me." And I said, "Oh, well, that's wonderful. What has he done to make you, know that? Has he said something?" She said, "No, but I've been really my high maintenance self this week. I've been kind of challenging, and he's been so good to me," she said. "And if he can handle me in those times, I think maybe he could handle me at any time." And I said, "Well, Jessica, isn't there something we can do to warn this guy, to help him out a little bit? If you're in a mood, could you just do something so that, he knows to stay out of your way?" And, of course, I got the dismissive, "Oh, Mom." So I immediately took that as a challenge and went back and decided that if I could create a little beaded bracelet that said caution on it, kind of like crime scene tape, that when she was in a mood, she could wear her bracelet and just hold it up and he would know to turn in the other direction. So she has actually found it quite useful, and I've decided it could be not just for boyfriends and girlfriends. And, oh, by the way, they're still together, so I guess it's working. it could be for, your boss. If you're having a bad day, just flash it to your boss, right? Or if your children are kind of getting in your face, just children see you have on your caution bracelet, and, arguments do not need to ensue, and everyone can, lead a more peaceful life because of the caution bracelet.
See, not only is it a great story, you're doing a public service, Betsy.
There it is. I'm helping people everywhere.
You're helping people. See, yeah. We all have those times. I think there are times where I haven't, read enough, or I haven't, I haven't gone down and worked on hopscotch enough, or something like that, where my dear wife can tell I'm getting cranky, and she kind of dismisses me and goes away. I mean, you must have moments like that.
Me? No.
No.
My husband can tell when I haven't been knitting for a couple of days, because that's when I get cranky.
Well, okay. I've never seen you cranky, so I don't know about that.
Remember, I went to acting school, Benjamin.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You did.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're coming down to the end of this here pretty quickly. So I understand that you have a Cyber Monday announcement for Fiber Hooligans. Did you want to tell them what that was?
I do. I'm so excited. I love Cyber Monday. So here's what I'd like to do. I so appreciate Fiber Hooligans and the support they give to all of us out there in the fiber world. So in turn, I would like to offer all of the Fiber Hooligans a discount on the Studio B Knit Shop. And I'd like to offer you 20% off all materials, kits, and patterns for the rest of this week. It'll start right now, and the discount can be used as many times as you like through midnight next Sunday, December 8th. And when you go to check out on the site, you'll see a field for a discount code, and that code will be Hooligan20. So just put that in there, and you'll see 20% off on your entire purchase. And also know that all of my anything you buy from the online store ships free. I hate when I have to pay for shipping. It makes me crazy. I find something I really like, think I'm getting a good deal, and then I end up having to pay a lot of money for shipping. So no shipping charges on the store, and 20% off through next Sunday. So have fun.
And I want to make sure that people understand that's That's Hooligan, H-O-O-L-I-G-A-N, 20.
Right. And as you've told me, it's not case sensitive, so you can put it in as all caps, all lower, mixed caps, whatever. It'll go through however you type it.
It will, but if you type out the word 20, it won't work. So you must use
No, I'm sorry. You need numbers, right?
You need numbers, right. Yeah, those aren't
case
sensitive.
Thank you, Benjamin.
No problem. No problem. And it was Jessica in the chat room that, you know, leave it to her. Okay.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica. So thank you very much for that offer for Fiber Hooligans. We'll make sure that we get back out to the boards and share that with people that didn't get a chance to listen right away.
Good.
Are there any shout-outs that you'd like to give to anyone or reminders of anything that you're working on or anything that's coming up in your world?
Just quickly, for me, family is always paramount. It's always first. So, yeah, shout-outs to my mom for all the reasons I've talked about, to my husband, Ted. You indicated, and it's certainly true, he's been my biggest fan all the way along. When I kept saying I was just a technical knitter and he kept saying, no, you're creative, I guess he knew what he was talking about. And my two children, Daniel and Jessica, who inspire me with their own adventurous spirits, they're both so creative and they're both fearlessly pursuing their own challenging careers about which they are totally passionate and they're succeeding. And so they're my immediate support network, and I could not be more grateful for them. And then for the students who I interact with and who have been so supportive and gracious about sharing their work and how they feel about what we're doing together, I could not be more grateful. And lastly, of course, to my second family at XRX. I don't know what I would do without you guys. I could not be more grateful for everything that you've done for me.
Oh, you make me a little wistful here.
Well, see, now you know I mean it sincerely. I truly
I know you do.
Okay.
I know you do. You're a sweet lady. Before we wrap this up, do you have any final advice that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Okay. So I actually do listen to the podcast, so I knew this question was coming, so I did prepare two quick things. One, I love the way that you always end your show talking about being kind. I just think that's something that we all need to do more of. But I also want to suggest to, especially to my lady knitters in my classes, both in person, crafty, wherever, that think about being kinder to yourself. As middle-aged women especially, we tend to get very frustrated if we don't learn something the first time around. And if we don't, we accuse ourselves of being less than. And it makes me sad to hear people think that way about themselves. So I would just suggest to you all that remember that learning takes time and it takes patience. And sometimes we find ways to give to others in our lives. So how about treating ourselves to some of the same kindness? And number two, when you give yourself that time, use it to be honest about your own work. The last time I looked, there were no prizes being awarded for finishing the most number of projects in a given time frame. And the bottom line is you need to work to please yourself. Again, you can't please everyone, so it's foolish to let that be the focus of your creative endeavors. And once you remove time as a constraint, you never have to settle for less than your best work. You owe that to yourself, and take the time to enjoy what you do. And we're the luckiest people on the planet to be able to work in a craft that brings us such joy and allows us to meet just amazingly wonderful people who are so generous in so many ways. And I feel so fortunate to be a part of that world.
Well, as answers go, you hit it out of the ballpark, of course. I kind of knew you would, not to put too much pressure on you. I don't really know quite how to say thank you. I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you, Betsy, for always being a friend. I mean, there have been times in the past where I've had some rough patches, and you've always let me bend your ear or check up on me, and it has meant, and it continues to mean so much to know that you're there as the very good friend that you are.
Well, I think you know without my saying, but everyone else should know that you are a person who always gives more than you get. So it's easy to be kind to you because you are always kind and available to me. So thank you in return.
So I'll look forward to seeing you again very soon at one of the stitches at either west or south. And I'm sure that I'll be bugging you from time to time just because I need to have my Betsy fix every so often. So,
I feel the same way. And happy holidays to everyone moving forward, and best wishes for an even better 2014 than 2013, which has been pretty darn fantastic. Thank you, Benjamin.
It has. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
That was Betsy Hirschberg. You can keep up with what she's doing at StudioBKnits.com and Store.StudioBKnits.com. And you're going to want to get yourself up to the latter, Store.StudioBKnits.com, to take advantage of her Fiber Hooligan Cyber Monday special. That's a tongue twister. Let's do that again. Fiber Hooligan Cyber Monday special, 20% off. Yeah, there's some really beautiful stuff up there. And this is now, you know, again, she's become a dealer. She's making it cheaper for you guys to, you know, to start the habit. All right. This week we're going to continue on with our new segment from our roving virtual reporter to tell us about what she's seen in the fiber arts world that she thinks we should know about. I'd like to welcome back the moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group and Fiber Hooligans Facebook group, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us from Boise, Idaho this morning. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Well, so you got to have a great weekend. Yeah,
I did. Other than we survived Thanksgiving. I'm just irritated because I've got this thing on my hand. It makes me a little slower, and you know I can't get as much done. But you know, how was your week?
My weekend, Thanksgiving was nice and quiet here, so I rearranged my craft room while Superman made turkey dinner, and I felt like I got a lot done. I'm actually sitting in here today, so that was a good thing.
It was a very good thing. So the first thing we should talk about is we have decided on a name for your segment.
We did.
We batted some ideas around, and we didn't go exactly with one that was suggested, but we took a variation of one that was suggested.
Yes. Kathy in San Jose, that's her name. She had one that we felt was closest to the spirit of your program. So, and unfortunately, I would get really tongue-tied each week saying hooliganisms, I'm sure. So
in other words, so instead we've decided, and here's the winner, folks, and Kathy wins. We're gonna send her the Knitters Magazine subscription. But do you want to tell them, or shall I tell them what the name of this segment is?
Go ahead.
It is going to be it's going to be The State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I think that's
like
wonderful.
That? I think it is too. Yeah. State of the Hooligan should be perfect. So that's not our big news. We got a lot to cover today because you got some reminders and some announcements you want to talk about. So let's get to your segment. What do you want to talk about first?
First of all, I want to remind everybody that might be in that area that the Arkansas Fiber Arts Extravaganza is this week. Classes and then the early peek at the vendor area starts on Thursday and it goes through Saturday. In Hart Springs, Arkansas. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of exciting, fun fibers for everybody of all different kinds of crafts, knitting, crocheting, spinning. There's actually a weaver supply person going to be in the vendor area too, as well as Sally Melville is going to be the primary keynote speaker, and she's got some big classes lined up too. So that I think that sounds like it's going to be a great event to get to go to if you can make it to that area. The next thing on our list was that there was an article, and I can share this in the Ravelry forum, about a lady in Ontario, and I hope I don't botch the name of the town, Mississauga. She actually has been clocked as the fastest knitter in North America. You and I saw the fastest knitting competition. I think Jeannie from PSG Yarns was there too, saw the fastest knitting competition at the last Sock Summit. And we saw the lady that won was stitching at about or better one stitch per second. And this lady in this article is being clocked at about a stitch and a half per second, so a little bit faster. I don't think I'm ever going to get to be a speed knitter, but clearly she's getting a lot accomplished really in a very short period of time. And I will share, like I said, I will share the link to that article so people can catch it if they missed it. The last thing that we wanted to talk about was Marley Bird has posted a huge, long, long, long list of all the great Black Friday, which of course is over, but Cyber Monday, that today, deals from all different kinds of yarny goodies. Crochet Dude, Fiesta Yarns, I believe is in there, Bijou Basin, Erin Lane and Namaste Bags are all in there. Lots of designers. Look through the list and read it carefully because a lot of it has code words that you need to use in order to get the deals that are being offered, and that's at marleybird.com, and I can put the link for that in the Ravelry notes right now as well.
Well, that's fantastic. Boy, you were a busy gal. You got lots to tell. You covered a lot today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, since we're coming down to it, I think we'll start to close off the show. I want to thank you for another great report, and I'll look forward to hearing from you again next Monday, Tammy.
All right. We'll see you then. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. That was Tammy Burke, our roving virtual Fiber Hooligan reporter and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. Our new segment will be called, and maybe I'll work some sound effects, State of the Hooligan. And for those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us up on one of those groups, either on Facebook or Ravelry. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer correct questions and provide follow-up to anything you might ask about the show. And there are several links that we want to make sure that you have yet today. Some of them are, e-commerce specific, and you're going to want to get those. So we'll get those up as soon as we can. Next Monday, my guest will be the very talented Amy Herzog. Amy is passionate about sweaters people love to wear. She is the author of Knit to Flatter and Design Sweaters that Flatter the Figure and are Easy to Modify. She is also a knitting expert on American Public Television's Knit and Crochet Now. She teaches classes across the country and on Craftsy.com, and her figure flattering pattern designs have been published in Twist Collective, Knit Scene, Interweave Knits, Knitty, and many more. After several years of teaching knitting classes, she realized that knitters will skip modification math if they can, but would really like to wear sweaters that fit them well. So she created Custom Fit, a website that produces custom sweater patterns. It can be found at customfit.makewearlove.com. I love that address. Amy will be with us to talk about all of that, the opening day presentation that she's planning for Stitches South in April, and much more. This will be a great show, and I hope you'll join us next Monday. I want to make sure that you know that I am eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email or question on the podcast. That's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.